thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Hokas, Pierre LaFon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And speaking of CSU Channel Islands, we have today two professors from the mathematics department. We have Dr. Cindy Wiles, who's a professor of mathematics, and Dr. Celine Benuelos.
Yes.
All right. a professor of mathematics, also at Cal State Channel Islands. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, you know, one of the things that I always found interesting is when we talk about mathematics, there's different types of mathematics. And I remember in high school, there was this term pure mathematics. And one of the things that really scared me about math is that we had a professor when I was a sophomore in high school who held up a piece of paper, a blank piece of paper, and said, "What's on this piece of paper?" And everyone said, "Nothing." He said, "No. There were millions and millions of matrices." And he believed that. And I headed to social studies because I didn't quite understand. And I guess there's some pure mathematical idea that anything that's blank has within it. But it's the abstractness of pure math that sort of scared me away. So first of all, was my professor, I'm still mad at him, was my professor in 1962 correct?
Sounds a little bit crazy to me.
Yes, I'm not sure what.
So why weren't you there to support me then?
I wasn't born yet, but if I had been, I would have been right there next to you.
So tell me then, what is pure mathematics?
Oh, she's going to look at me. So pure mathematics. So it's an abstract study. It's a human creation. A lot of times it's inspired by stuff in reality, but then you're trying to say, okay, what are the fundamental things that we can abstract out of that and then just study those things with the idea then that when you do want to apply those back to real situations, they'll apply to a whole variety of situations. The blank piece of paper, I'm not sure where he was going with that. I would hope he'd actually follow up and tell you why he said that, but without knowing that, I can't support him on that one.
So pure mathematics is different from applied mathematics, or how to write a new app. I mean, what is pure mathematics? It seems to me intuitively is about just studying math for the sake of math. Is that?
I'm actually an applied mathematician, and I'd say in applied mathematics it's a huge range of like really how applied are you? Sometimes we as mathematicians think applied mathematics is just having a model that you can apply a theory to, as opposed to maybe having a very numerical approach to a mathematical model. I would say it varies quite a bit.
And math is something that, I guess talking to both of you, women can actually do. I was told that women couldn't do math.
Yes, we
or
can.
Or sciences.
Women can absolutely do math. Women can do any STEM field they want to do. It's often a question of whether they want to and whether they've gotten the encouragement and the preparation along the way to succeed.
And one of the things that I know both of you care about is finding ways to help other women not be dissuaded by some negativity and to follow in your footsteps.
Definitely.
And that's true both for women in general and for some of the more underprivileged people in our community. So tell us a little bit about that.
I think one way we think about it is that math has been somewhat of this exclusive club and somewhat of an elitist club with, you know, either have it or you don't is a common perception. And so our work and the work of a lot of our friends and our networks is about opening that up and helping people understand what it is, what the encouragement, what the preparation are that people need to succeed and providing those things and making it a more welcoming and inclusive climate and atmosphere so that more people will actually want to do it as well as be supported in doing it.
And I think it's also really important for our students to see to see themselves in these programs, in these departments, because it goes a long way. I'll give you a simple example for myself. And as an undergraduate, when one of my mentors was telling me, like, you should keep studying, you should go for a PhD. And I said to myself, why? By the time I'm done, am I really even going to be able to get a job? Because I'm looking around here in this department, I don't see a woman in this department, a tenure track faculty member, and very few Hispanic or Latino faculty. And I remember also thinking to myself that if I was going to go for a PhD, I was already making a choice, for example, not to have children, because I didn't know any women who were faculty who had children at the time. And then once, you know, your network expands a little bit more and you say, wow, you have kids. How are you doing it? But, you know, again, I think it goes a long way to see, as a student, to see yourself in faculty or and, other leaders.
And some of the younger kids are going to be benefit from your experience and from your success, because they'll be able to see people who actually look like them who are successful in this field. Mm-hmm. So what about we talk about applied mathematics and pure mathematics. What about the stories that everyone who's got any type of math skills wants to write an app and make a lot of money? Is that really math, computer coding? Is that what you are? There people in your program that on the side or in terms of their motivation, looking to be in that business as opposed to looking at the more traditional mathematics?
I think most of our students come in not really knowing what you can do with mathematics. A lot of students come in thinking, well, I have to take it so I can do whatever it is I really want to do, which might be write an app. But what we know is that mathematical thinking really blends into a lot of different fields. So you can be a mathematician and a biologist. You can use mathematical thinking in creating your software, things like that. So our job is to help them understand that if you actually study mathematics, if you choose that for your major, that you have a whole range of options open to you, whereas a lot of students come out of high school thinking if you study mathematics, you have to be a high school mathematics teacher. And there's literally hundreds of things you can do. And so we need to show them that and help them see kind of the excitement and the beauty of mathematics.
Mm-hmm. I was telling you before the show that one of the disappointing things that I experienced when I got into a prep school, I was very good at math, and so they skipped me into a higher class, and they just began talking as if talking French to me. And the other kids understood it, and I dropped out after a year, and I never picked up math again until graduate school, when I began to learn that the first derivative is about calculating a company's sales growth and how it slows down exponentially over time. So I learned calculus through the idea of intuitive concepts. And then I kind of got pissed that, you know, my freshman year of high school, I could have done more in math, because it was taught for those that really kind of understood the language already. So is this an experience that I had that's unique, or is there an attempt now to reach out to every type of learner in math, that both the kind that just get it and the kind that needs some sort of connection to the real world?
I'd say there's definitely an attempt now. And it's been ongoing since like the 90s or so, mm-hmm. with the calculus reform, for example, with calculus. But there's a big push right now for more active learning and inquiry-based learning or project-based learning, and how do you approach the material of a class as opposed to here's a definition, here's a theorem, now apply it to something. We can now, you know, go through a project, for example, in economics and say, you know, what do you think a derivative is now?
What is inquiry based mathematics?
Inquiry-based learning, inquiry-based mathematics is part of a suite of active learning. And what we know now is the traditional methods of teaching mathematics, wherein the professor lectures and the students sit quietly and take notes and then go home and maybe struggle with problems on their own, doesn't work very well. It works for the sorts of people that have traditionally succeeded in mathematics, or maybe the ones who already got there knowing something. But so the active learning kind of broad umbrella is understanding that students need to grapple with cognitively rich tasks as they're working on mathematics, that they do better in community, having the support of one another, that the teacher, the professor is doing the best service when they structure challenging activities in the right way to kind of scaffold students' learning through the mathematics, rather than, again, just kind of try to open their brains and dump it in through a lecture. So there's still a place for lecture, but shorter and really more student engagement is so, what we're finding works for all sorts of people.
Some schools across the country are experimenting with the idea of having kids study and learn at home, but do homework in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Because the classroom is where it's better to do the homework, because then they can interact with the teacher.
That's something we call the flipped classroom.
Oh, okay.
So there's an actual term for it. Or, there's also the Moore method and all. But the flipped classroom is essentially this. It's either readings or short videos of 5-10 minutes that you watch outside of class to get a little bit of the material, and maybe you answer a few questions so that when you get into the class, you do the harder problems. Because the flip is usually you're presented material in class, and then you go home and do the harder problems at home. This way, you know, there's more... There's richer dialogue going on in the classroom.
And I would imagine mathematics, as opposed to other subjects, really requires doing. You know, you can listen to a history professor and sort of get it, but if you don't do it in math, you're not going to really get it. Is that not true? Or?
That's absolutely true. We a lot of us say things on our syllabus to the effect that mathematics is not a spectator sport, that you really need to grapple with it and do it to get anywhere. And I wanted to add on the flipped class, there's a subtlety to what you actually do in class. You can have students, you know, cover the introductory material on their own through reading or videos. But if they then come to class and you hand them kind of routine plug-and-chug homework problems, you're not going to be very effective. So it's what you do in class and how you structure that and how you kind of build the classroom environment that can make a very big difference in their learning.
You're listening to AHA Presents on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Cynthia Wiles, professor of mathematics, and Dr. Celine Banuelos.
Yes.
All right. Professor of mathematics, both from Cal State University at Channel Islands. And speaking of Cal State University of Channel Islands, is a university that really is doing things differently than most of the bigger schools. And when we're listening to the first segment, we're taking for granted some of the things you're saying, but you don't find this in every university. In fact, one of the things that I like about Channel Islands is that it's a teaching school. It's not a research school. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from UCSB, particularly since Cindy got her a PhD from there.
And I actually got my bachelor's degree
through that. Okay. But the reality is you're paid to be able to inspire and teach, whereas a lot of schools, teaching schools, research schools, they're paid to write articles. And so a lot of the things that we're talking about here are really part of the whole CSU Channel Islands philosophy of engaging with the students, which is really great. And speaking of that, I remember when I was getting my MBA, and I went into the head of the department, and I said, I'd like to know what my grade on my thesis was. And he said, what do you care? I said, well, if I get an A, I'm going to graduate with honors, and it will look good on my resume. He said, what do you need a job for? I thought, based on your thesis, you're going to apply all of what you learned to make money in the stock market. Well, 50 years later, somebody wrote a book called Black Swan, which Nicholas Taleb, who actually turned out to be, among other things, a professor at NYU, where I went to school, and he took all my theories and applied it with the proper mathematics. I didn't have the mathematical skills to take my concept and make it into a reality. And he did. And he is, I think, by the way, I think he's great. He's a philosopher / bond trader / mathematician who's basically turned the whole financial world upside down with very rigorous mathematics to basically prove that almost everything you learn in graduate school as an MBA is worthless. And he does it mathematically. And so one of the long-winded stories I'm telling here now is that there are, in cases of even someone like me, I wish I would have been better at math. I could have taken an idea that I really have been thinking about for years and making it a reality. I just at that point didn't have the skills to do it. And that gets us back to this whole thing about applied versus pure. I thought I was doing something pure. Now it's kind of old hat and applied. So there is something like their lines are kind of crossing between applied and the pure.
Yeah, the boundaries are artificial, and in some sense, you know, graduate departments, you know, UCSB and all the places you might have applied mathematicians or somebody's labeled as a pure mathematician of various types. But these things they overlap, they cross hatch. Most of the good work is being done, you know, most of the good research work is being done at the intersections, either between these things or between mathematics and other disciplines. And what we were talking about a little bit was how things that people did and they valued because they were pure, because they had a distaste for any applications, especially when you think about how many of the applications are military in nature. They're like, I want to have nothing to do with that. I'm going to do my little pure corner of things over here. And then 50 or 60 years later, some engineer finds out that that very pure thing was exactly what was needed to realize the internet, for instance.
So speaking of that, how interdisciplinary is the school? So you've got mathematics, you've got engineering, you've got computer sciences, I imagine, you've got physics. How much of what you want to convey to these kids are discussed interdepartmentally?
Well, I'd say our mathematics students in particular have to take quite a few computer science courses, and the computer science students actually have to take up to about second, third year of mathematics. So they, those two programs are, they take a lot of courses from each department.
But do you talk about, I believe that college education is has many, many aspects more than just what kind of job you get. But still, there should be some component of what can you do with it. Mm-hmm. So is there discussion among the faculty about what can we do to make it possible for someone actually to make a living other than teaching this?
Oh, sure. And I'm going to answer that in two threads. And so one is looking at the research projects we do with the students. We love hearing you say how we're very student-focused. We do research. We value research. But we often use it as a tool to even move students further along on their educational paths. And so just in the mathematics faculty alone, we have people doing research projects that include voting, mm-hmm. that include a lot of environmental science. So some of the stuff I've done with students, we were collaborating with field biologists looking at humpback cow-calf interactions and help me out on some of the other examples.
So Catherine Leonard and her students were doing research on image analysis as well.
That applied to spread of fires. They were able to use some of the techniques to model ballerina dancing. Mm-hmm. So the choreography, how can you record that in a fixed way? Strawberry picking, so agricultural overlap, so tons of things.
Data analysis right now as well.
Data analysis is huge.
How about statistics for people in psychology? You know, my wife is a psychologist, and she had to take statistics because in order to do studies, you need statistics. But if you don't have the math skills, statistics is kind of difficult.
Yeah. So the math skills and the data analysis, there's this category of things we just kind of refer to as mathematical thinking, and now it's maybe even, you know, statistical thinking that's going to be valuable no matter what you're studying and what you want to do, but you have to have some familiarity with it to even be able to see how it could help you and see what kind of questions you might be able to improve your business, to improve your research in some other field. You need that kind of grounding to be able to say, okay, maybe I'm not going to do the data analysis, but here's what it could bring me, and then to go out and hire somebody that could do that for your company.
I was trying to help my granddaughter do mathematics in the second grade, and, you know, 2 + 3 = 5. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. It's 2 - 3 = 1. 1 + 2 = 3. That is, they teach you in the high schools now, and in the elementary schools, I forgot the term, that the new...
Common Core method?
Core method is not to memorize. Mm-hmm. So 2 + 3 = 3, the bigger number minus a small number is gets you 1, and then add that number to the smaller number, okay? And everyone's looking at me like I'm nuts.
What end?
In order to learn, not by rote, but to learn what in fact you're doing when you're counting.
We're all making faces at each other here, kind of, huh?
Well, it's gotten so bad that Richard just told me to give me a 2-minute warning, even though we don't have a 2-minute warning. So is this possible why my grandchild didn't understand me?
It's possible, yeah.
No, but what is interesting, though, you know, no matter how screwed up I had that example, there is an issue about parents no longer able to help some of their kids in Common Core classes because even in biology, doctors can't help their kids sometimes because it's being taught differently. And the idea is to learn it intuitively, not rote.
I don't have much experience with Common Core.
Neither does anybody else, obviously.
Right. But I will say this, though. The idea of it is great. Again, taking students away from memorizing certain aspects of mathematics and really understanding what a lot of this notation and definitions mean. So the idea, of course, is great. And once my kid gets to, these grades where he gets to add and multiply and all that, I hope I will be able to help him.
We're eager to see what happens as students go through this. There's always there's the idea that, as Selena says, is a great idea that we want students to understand what they're not doing and not see math as just this bag of rules that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Mathematicians don't think of it that way. We think everything makes sense, and when you understand it, then you can see how to unpack it and apply it and all those sorts of things. So as they're coming through the schools, if it's implemented well, big if, we won't have to do quite as much unteaching of what mathematics is when they get to college.
You know, because of texting, some of the kids don't understand contractions or grammar, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because people now have you know, calculators and on their iPhones, there was some thought even 15 years ago that maybe kids aren't going to need to learn long division. And, you know, isn't that a basis to really begin to understand math? If you skip that and you have no understanding and feel for numbers, mm-hmm. I think that's really a problem.
Yeah, definitely need a number sense.
Yeah.
Just scale, magnitude, what happens mm-hmm. with different basic operations on numbers. Mm. You need that sense.
I agree, but I think we also need to look at mathematics right now and technology and ask ourselves, well, do we need to focus 2-3 months of the school year on long division as opposed to let's talk about the concept, this is how it works, and now, again, use technology to further our education, because otherwise we're not changing, right? Mm-hmm. Mathematics and the way it's taught is exactly the same.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, improving attitude, creating social harmony, bridging the achievement gap for teens. I'm Neil Kreisel and Cynthia Wiles, Dr. Cynthia Wiles, Professor of Mathematics, and Dr. Celine Winnell. Banulis.
Banulis, yeah.
Professor of Mathematics at Cal State. We need someone who can teach me to speak. Do you have any? Do you have courses there that I can learn to speak? I got rid of my New York accent, luckily, after 19 years. See, I speak with a California accent now, but I still can't pronounce some certain Spanish names.
And in Santa Barbara, that's a problem.
It's not a problem. Yeah. So, I asked somebody here when I first moved here. I asked a contractor who was unable to perform his duties because he was going surfing. I said, wow, everyone goes surfing around here. I said, can I learn how to surf? He said, I don't think you could lift my surfboard. Anyway, so that was it for my surfing days. So enough of me. Let's talk about you. So let's talk about how you got here, because you're two, you know, beautiful women who are teaching math, and that's not what I remember to be the path. So tell us about your story. Were you interested in math in kindergarten, in elementary school? How did you get interested in math?
No, I think I learned math the way most people in high school did, most dutiful people that did their homework. You did it. It was boring. You maybe did it at lunch or in the period before it was due. I went to college and thought, by the end of my freshman year, I've done my two math and one science. I'm done with this stuff forever. And then I took another class. And kind of kept keeping that door open while I explored just about everything else. And I think I liked the challenge. I got my lowest grades in math. In college, we're in math classes. But I liked the challenge and just kind of kept taking one more.
Wow. So this wasn't like when you were 2 years old, you decided that, you know, you could play the piano. When you were 2 years old, you didn't decide that math was your...
No,
this
interest.
Was a, which is a good story to tell for people who are in not... Why are you laughing? Richard has a strange sense of humor, too. So basically, you are telling people that you don't need to have this childhood passion with it. You can learn to love it. Mm-hmm. Celine, what got you interested in math?
I'd say I was always interested in sciences ever since I was a kid. I remember my parents bought these children encyclopedia books, and I remember reading about the Big Bang there and just thinking how amazing that was. In high school, I'd have to say it was I was pretty good at mathematics, I'd say, in high school. And then when I got to college, I was double majoring in mathematics and biology. But then I was able to take the upper division mathematics courses by my sophomore year, and it was just beautiful. And so I dropped the biology major and just stuck to mathematics.
And along the trail, were there people that inspired you and that helped you?
Well, I'd say inspiring that I never met him, but he was always a role model for me, was Jaime Escalante, who's a teacher in East LA, Garfield High School. I'm not sure if you've ever seen the movie Stand and Deliver.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so that was the teacher there. And I mean, Garfield High School was like 5-10 blocks away from my house. So in the neighborhood, you know, we all knew about him and his story and how much he helped the students at that high school. So it was always an inspiration. Yeah, and I went into college hoping to be a high school math teacher because I wanted to be him. That was my goal.
And what about the issue that, I think makes some people think about it, some women rethink it, is about now believing that women can do this. Were there role models, women role models for you guys?
So actually, I think my story is kind of funny because I went to all girls high school. So there was never a question about what women could do because we were all women and we were all doing everything. And it wasn't until I got to college that I first got I got a couple of guys saying, like, I can't believe you got an A. I'm like, well, yeah, what do you mean? Of course I did. So that was the first kind of stories I got about that. So, I don't have the same story.
I had pretty much all male math faculty in college, but I went to a small college. We had relatively small classes. And I was playing women's basketball, and the math department faculty were incredibly supportive of the women's basketball team. Go figure, they'd go to the games, they'd have us the whole team over to their, you know, somebody's house for dinner once or twice a year. So I never felt any kind of issue about being a woman in mathematics there. But when I went to grad school, boom, it was big. There was definitely a climate of you don't belong. And it was okay for males to let women very explicitly know they didn't belong, and the faculty in grad school would just kind of let that go. That was how it was.
And were the faculty, were there women on the faculty?
Where I went to grad school, there were none that were visible to me. So there was probably one or two hidden back among 40 or 50 somewhere.
So it really is something that it's much more challenging then for a woman, at least when you went through it, than it is for a guy.
Even from my graduate experience, and I graduated in 2013, which is not too long ago, but when I started my graduate degree, there was one female faculty tenure track there, or tenured already, and then maybe 2-3 years later, another one came, and then my last year, it was a third.
You know,
among 60 or
so. There was this big article about 2 weeks ago in the New York Times about male nurses and how difficult the time they have, and yet how important male nurses are in some specific cases, and how good some of these male nurses are, mm-hmm. which is no surprise, but it's really a challenge for them socially mm-hmm. to take on that role. So this is not just limited to women. There's gender stereotyping that takes place that, you know, really creates a gate to so many people in so many areas. So tell us about team mentoring. What does team mentoring mean?
Team mentoring is something that makes us smile.
And you actually did smile.
I did, yes.
I thought it was the way I presented it, but no.
That's what made me start that way. It makes me smile.
Like, yeah, we're talking about team mentoring.
Yay.
Now.
No, because none of us have everything. And so to offer a student or to offer a colleague or somebody like that. And so what we have is a team of people that just keeps growing as we kind of promote this term. We've been doing it for a while, but we want to be explicit about it. So for instance, Selena arrived at Cal State Channel Islands more recently than I did. And I have young first generation Latina students that I've been mentoring and working with. And that's great, and they're going to conferences, and they're making progress. And then all of a sudden, she arrives with Dr. Cynthia Flores, who's also a Latina, and they're like, oh, my God, somebody who looks like me can be a math faculty member. And so she becomes another mentor to them as well, and it's just that much richer.
And the kids obviously see that.
They see a variety of skills and a variety of people making their way in mathematics, in STEM maybe. And the more people they see and the more people we expose them to, the different stories they see that have made it, that have become professionals in these fields, and the more they can envision their own story taking those paths.
And speaking of Latina and Latino students, the whole issue of the undocumented student and the fear that is involved because of the current administration, has that impacted the ability of these kids to learn? I mean, math was tough enough as without being afraid that my parents wouldn't be home when I got home.
Definitely. Yes, it definitely has hurt them a whole lot. I have students coming into my office to talk about just fears that they have. Students who've had to drop out of school and move because they had already signed up for DACA, so they were just afraid that now that they knew where they lived, that they would be come to get picked up. So they stopped and left. So yes, it definitely does impact them.
And going back further, we have students that you know, even when DACA was in place or prior to that, they're getting an education. They're incredibly talented. They've overcome a ton of barriers because they're getting an education without the financial assistance that other students from their socioeconomic class might. And yet they're doing it not knowing what doors will be open to them when they finish. So here I am making all these sacrifices, and I'm going to get my degree, but now I can't get a job. Or, you know, I've had a brilliant student, double major in math and computer science, apply for PhD programs, just didn't get in, and I think it's because she was open about her undocumented status. So there's, you know, so even in the best of the situation we've had in the last 10 or 20 years, there's still the question about what's next, and can I stay in the country? Can my family stay in the country? Can I come out from under the shadows and actually use these skills and these talents I'm developing?
I just remember going to school and having my kids go to school and all the pressures they had, and then nothing compared to what's happening today. I don't know how these kids do it. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
The Central Coast may seem laid back, but when it's time to work, no one works harder, including the bank that's grown up here. Montecito Bank and Trust offers customized lending and banking for all businesses, big and small. It's harder than offering one-size-fits-all solutions, but it's the right thing to do. And here, getting things right is a way of life. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Cynthia Wiles, professor of mathematics at Cal State University, Channel Islands, and Dr. Celine Benuelos, professor of mathematics at Cal State, Channel Islands. And, you know, one of the things that I like about AHA is that it's their belief that no matter how much you learn, if you don't have emotional intelligence, you're not going to succeed in life. So one of the questions I always like to ask people in the sciences is, when I was going to school, there was the sciences that were sort of rigid about science, but what about things about how to be a human being and how to interact with people? How do you make sure that the kids get some experience in emotional intelligence?
Well, you know, I always answer this question with my own experience.
You mean you've heard this question?
Yeah, well, I'd say the love-hate relationship I've had with general education requirements, because all the students, no matter what their major are, we have general education requirements that they have to satisfy. And I think it's really important, especially for our science majors, to take social justice courses, sociology, psychology, and so on, communications, because, again, otherwise we're just going to have, as you mentioned, scientists that are very rigid and right. Haven't been exposed to these other fields.
So I just like to read this. This is a faculty profile from the school's website, and it just tells me, it reinforces my notion that I don't really understand mathematics. It's about Cindy Wiles, and it says, Dr. Wiles' research interests lie in combinatorial mathematics and linear algebra. Most recently, she has focused on questions in graph pebbling and graph labeling. So of that 25 words, I understood two. Now,
which two?
I understood, well, I'm not sure I understood even two. So I couldn't even pronounce combinatorial mathematics?
Yeah, combinatorial mathematics.
So I could now almost say it. So that's a start.
That's a start.
So what is it?
Ooh, so it's this really broad field of mathematics. You could boil it down to saying you're counting things, but not one, two, three, four, but things that are too complex to count that way. So it's a series of techniques to first say, how many ways are there to do these things? And then to say, if there's a best, and best, of course, requires some clarification depending on the context, what is the best way? Can we figure it out? So there are tons of applications in your field, in financial mathematics or finance in general. There's tons of combinatorialists developing algorithms that are figuring out the best way to invest based on whatever your given assumptions are. And it can be pure. It can be applied. It's really very broad ranging.
And I think I almost understand it. What's graph pebbling? That one I'm sure I'm not going to understand. Do you make these names up so no one
knows? No. So that's kind of an abstraction of idea. But if you think about it this way, so I'm going to use an applied example. So Walmart, whether you shop with them or not, they have distribution centers all over the country, and they want to position their goods so they can get them to where they need to get them efficiently. So graph pebbling is kind of analogous in that you have these graphs that could be the roads and the distribution centers, and you're saying, okay, if we have an arrangement of pebbles, maybe they're goods, on this graph, you have questions about distributing them efficiently, whether it's possible, if so, whether there's a best way to do it or a best way to set things up.
So are there equations that if somebody was not great but okay could learn and help Walmart, or is this something that every time you do it is somebody has to discover something? I mean, is there some best practices around for doing this?
Well, we were talking earlier about the idea of taking situations and abstracting out what the fundamental underlying concepts are, and so graph pebbling is a way of doing that, where if somebody makes a discovery in graph pebbling, Walmart may be interested in the people scheduling airplanes as they fly around the country may be interested in it. So no, they wouldn't have to rediscover it. If they could take some ideas there and apply them.
So do you work with companies as well as teach?
I don't with on that not
on anything.
No.
I mean, do you?
No, pretty much no, because I think my focus is I'd rather use that as a tool to kind of do it at the basic levels, bring students into it, figure out new ideas that we can prove, and use that as a mechanism for getting students to conferences, getting students to understand better how mathematicians think, and opening up their paths going forward.
Well, that's great, because I remember when I was very much younger and I was a partner of this Wall Street firm, and I went out to Stanford to recruit MBAs who were about to graduate. And I pulled up. I'd never been there before the graduate school. And I said, I must be in the wrong place. Every car was a Mercedes. So I said to the person who was setting us up in a room, I said, what's with the parking lot? I said, oh, those are the professors' cars. I said, professors make that much money? He said, well, here they don't really teach. They work for big companies. So it's sort of, you know, this whole, you know, difference between a teaching school and a school that does a lot of research. There's more things I don't understand, but one of the things that I think is worth noting is that in 2017 you were named Distinguished Mentor Award for the Society for the Advancement of Chicanos and Hispanics and Native Americans in Science. So tell us a little about that award. Okay. Is that like the Academy Awards?
There's no photographers, so that's all good.
There were photographers,
that's true. So the society you name, we call that SACNAS. It's an amazing society. It's the most diverse scientific society in the world. So you go to the national conference, and there's going to be 5,000 or 6,000 scientists everywhere, from Nobel Prize winners, heads of federal agencies, all the way through all the different ranks, industry people, as well as community college students, and maybe even some high school students. And it's the kind of culture I was talking about earlier, about this elitism and this sort of, hey, we got in, let's keep our club kind of exclusive. Socknoss is about blowing that up across STEM fields. They are about developing talent. I should say we. I'm a life member. I love being part of that group. But one of their mantras is reach as you climb. So I'm a college faculty member. I know some stuff about being an undergraduate, being a graduate student, being a junior faculty member. My job is to help share my knowledge and help other people achieve where I'm at. Meanwhile, if I need to develop my leadership capabilities to do something else, there people are going to help me.
And you won the award for your advancement of Chicanos and Hispanics and Native Americans in science. It sort of fits right into Channel Islands. Mm-hmm. Is that what it was about? Because we have a high Hispanic population and we have the Chumash Indians here? Or this was just...
I'd say it's about team mentoring again. So it's about how do people need help? How can we help them? How can we connect them up? I met Selena at Socknoss in 2014 or something. You know, our students go there. You're right, Cal State Channel Islands has a large population of Latina students and students from other ethnic minorities. They go to Socknoss and they're surrounded by people who look like them, who have PhDs, who are encouraging them, opening doors for them. Mm-hmm. It's life-changing. Mm-hmm.
And you're involved with it also.
I am. I've actually been a Socknista since I was in undergrad. And that's another thing that I really love about Socknoss is that they help students at every stage in their career, going from undergraduate to should I even apply to a PhD program, which PhD programs should I apply to, professor development there, and then as they continue on their career. I went through their Socknoss Leadership Institute as well. And again, just trying to help tomorrow's leaders, even in administrative positions and all.
When Cindy won the award, did she still let you call her by her first name?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
But by the way, there was a group of us who nominated her. About seven or so of us. Everybody was super excited to nominate her.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear from humble beginnings in 1973. Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
What's that?
This? The newest online business banking around.
Can you initiate wires and approve transfers?
Yes.
Pay bills?
Check.
Cash management?
Of course.
All business, all online, all on your phone.
You bet. My computer, too. It's Montecito Bank and Trust's new business online banking. It works as hard as I do.
Huh. Montecito Bank and Trust.
You got it. Montecito Bank and Trust. Behind every great community is a great bank. Montecito.bank. Member FDIC.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. I'm Neil Kreisel, and we're here today with Dr. Cynthia Wiles, Professor of Mathematics at Cal State University, Channel Islands, and Dr. Celine Benuelos, Professor of Mathematics at Cal State University. And at Channel Islands. And Celine, you did research on human sleep patterns. So I have a question for you. I take 2 naps a day. What does that mean? Does that mean I'm getting older?
So actually, the research I do is on circadian and trained adults that sleep throughout the night for about 8 hours. And we're looking at changing the ambient temperature in the room and how that affects the REM and non-REM sleep. But it's a mathematical model. And it's really important to give biology this other lens because, again, to figure out what exact parts in the brain act or which parts of the brain are active and inactive, we'd have to really damage a brain to figure that out, mm-hmm. right? And mathematical modeling says, wait, you don't have to do that. Let me give you a couple simulations and we can, you know, pick on the brain there. Mathematically.
Yeah, like some of the, like concussion disease, in order to find out if it really was, you have to cut exactly. their brain in half, which is a very painful way of diagnosing somebody. we're in Santa Barbara, even though our signal goes down to Camarillo. Can you tell me, or do you have any sense of how many Santa Barbara kids go to Channel Islands or are in your classes?
We actually know that just because of the mudslides. When the freeway was closed the week before classes started, our campus folks ran, I think they ran, you know, the addresses by zip code and mm-hmm. found out there are about 260 some students. We don't know how many of those actually live in the dorms because they were still trying to figure mm-hmm. that out. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the freeway reopened on the first day of classes, so mm-hmm. it became less of an issue.
And following through with that, do you have any sense of how Latinos and Latinas are doing in mathematics from the area? I mean, are there kids that are going there and studying mathematics?
Absolutely, yeah. I think so. We've been looking a little bit at the data. Selena and I are both part of a countywide project, our three community colleges as well as Cal State Channel Islands, looking at improving student success rates, retention, graduation, everything like that, around the calculus courses that serve the STEM fields. And so we still have some ethnic and gender disparities, but the whole idea of the initiative is to transform our teaching so that students' experience is improved so we can eliminate those disparities. So we have a quite a few Latino students. Many of them are doing well. We think more can do even better.
And do you find the same resistance, if there is still resistance, more resistance from Latina or Latinos than just for women who are not for STEM programs?
In terms of other people's expectations?
No resistance. There are anecdotal stories of women who just don't want to be involved in STEM because they don't think it's the place that will be accepting. Is it worse for Hispanics than it is for white females, or is it just across the board?
I'd say nationwide, the data speaks for itself. We're not doing great on campus. I don't recall.
One of the things you find, particularly from our community college transfers and the high school students, a Latina first generation student who is good in mathematics is typically encouraged to pursue engineering, or will go into business. So again, it's the sense of, you know, what is mathematics good for, that we haven't done a very good job with outreach and helping people understand that yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a final question. You mentioned, you know, these kids who transfer. Are the high schools preparing the kids for the kind of rigorous academic programs that you have?
That's a loaded question.
Yes.
We can all do better.
And does the school do remediation, or is it everyone has to fly on their own? These kids come out, and I know the answer to this question. I mean, mm-hmm. Some of these kids, you know, graduate, and they're not anywhere near college ready. So they may be capable, and they may be talented, yes. but they just mm-hmm. can't do first year courses. Are there any remediation programs to help these kids get going?
So we're actually losing our remediation on a mandate from the chancellor's office. So we'll be doing what we call our early math program. We'll be doing stretch courses and support courses. But our job is to take them where they are and help them get where they need to be. So mm-hmm. we're figuring out how to do that best we can.
Yeah. And, for those people who want to support the Channel Islands Foundation, this is an area that, you know, really would have significant bangs for the buck to help kids who really aren't ready but are smart and help them get through because, as you say, the chancellor, for whatever inexplicable reason, decided to eliminate funding for remediation, which to me makes no sense. But that's the way it is. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much all you do. I think maybe I should enroll in your course because I could. It's never too late, is it?
We'd be happy to have you.
Yes.
Boy, you should have seen the look that these two gave me when I suggested that. Anyway, thank you so much. You've been listening to AHA Presents About Education. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's